Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasadaya Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namani. Namaste Sarasvata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vashtachare Shatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Vidvaita Gadata Shivasati Gorba Trivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Still on verse 1, huh? Has that got verse 2 up there? Huh? Oh, well, actually, I didn't finish the purport of verse 1 still. It's still going on. So, chapter 1, verse 1, continued. The Supreme Lord is all perfect, is confirmed in all Shruti mantras. It is said in the Shruti mantras, the all perfect Lord threw a glance over matter and thus created all living beings. The living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord, and He impregnates the vast material creation with seeds of spiritual sparks, and thus the creative energies are set in motion to enact so many wonderful creations. An atheist may argue that God is no more expert than a watchmaker, but of course God is greater, because He can create machines to duplicate male and female forms. The male and female forms of different types of machineries go on producing innumerable similar machines without God's further attention. If a man could manufacture such a set of machines that could produce other machines without his attention, then he could approach the intelligence of God. That is not possible, for each machine has to be handled individually. Therefore, no one can create as well as God. Another name for God is Asamurdva, which means that no one is equal to or greater than Him. Param Satyam, or the Supreme Truth, is He who has no equal or superior. This is confirmed in the Shruti Mantras. It is said that before the creation of the material universe, there existed the Lord only, who is master of everyone. That Lord instructed Brahma in Vedic knowledge. That Lord has to be obeyed in all respects. Anyone who wants to get rid of the material entanglement must surrender unto Him. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Unless one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, it is certain that he will be bewildered. When an intelligent man surrenders under the lotus feet of Krishna and knows completely that Krishna is the cause of all causes, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, then only can such an intelligent man become a Mahatma or great soul. But such a great soul is rarely seen. Only the Mahatmas can understand that the Supreme Lord is the primeval cause of all creations. He is far more ultimate truth, because all other truths are relative to Him. He is omniscient. For Him, there is no illusion. Some Mayavadi scholars argue that Srimad Bhagavatam was not compiled by Srila Vasudeva, and some of them suggest this book is a modern creation written by someone named Vopadeva. In order to refute such meaningless arguments, Srila Sridhar Swami points out that there is reference to Bhagavatam in many other Puranas. This first sloka of the Bhagavatam begins with the Gayatri Mantra. There is reference to this in the Matsya Purana, which is the oldest Purana. In that Purana, it is said that with reference to the Gayatri Mantra and the Bhagavatam, that there are many narrations of spiritual instructions beginning with the Gayatri Mantra. And there is the history of Ritrasura. Anyone who makes the gift of this great work on the full moon day attains the highest perfection of life by returning to Godhead. There is reference to the Bhagavatam and other Puranas also, where it is clearly stated that this work was finished in 12 cantos, which included 18,000 slokas. In the Padma Purana, there's also a reference to the Bhagavatam in a conversation with Gautama and Maharaj Ambarish. The king was advised therein to read regularly Srimad Bhagavatam if he desired liberation from material bondage. Under the circumstances, no doubt about the authority of the Bhagavatam. Within the past 500 years, many erudite scholars and acharyas like Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Vishnu Chakravarti, Vallabhacharya, and many other distinguished scholars, even after the time of Lord Chaitanya, made elaborate commentaries on the Bhagavatam. And a serious student would do well to attempt to go through them to better relish the transcendental messages. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, or Adi Rasa, devoid of all mundane iniquity. The whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. In modern civilization, sex life is the focal point of all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. Therefore, sex life is not unreal. Its reality is experienced in the spiritual world. The material sex life is but a perverted reflection of the original fact. The original fact is in the absolute truth, and thus the absolute truth cannot be impersonal. It is not possible to be impersonal and contain pure sex life. Consequently, impersonalist philosophers have given indirect impetus to the abominable mundane sex life because they have overstressed the impersonality of the ultimate truth. Consequently, man without information of the actual pure form of sex has accepted perverted material sex life as the all in all. There is a distinction between sex life in the diseased material condition and sexual spiritual life. This Srimad Bhagavatam will gradually elevate the unbiased reader to the highest perfectional stage of transcendence. It will enable him to transcend the three modes of material nature, fruit of action, speculative philosophy, and worship of functional deities as inculcated in the Vedic verses. So that ends the commentary on the first verse of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, as I mentioned yesterday, the first verse should indicate the subject matter of the work and the importance of knowing this type of subject matter. So, the subject matter of the Bhagavatam ultimately is Krishna. Though we have 10 topics of a Purana that must be discussed within the context of the Bhagavatam, still, the goal is to glorify Krishna and speak about his pastimes. So that is the main subject matter. And this is important because Krishna is a special form of the Supreme Lord. Though the Supreme Lord comes in many, many forms and they're all equal in that they're all God, Krishna is considered very special. So that is why in the list of avatars given in the first canto by Suta Goswami, when he was requested by the sages to list the avatars, he went through all the avatars, and when he came to Krishna, then he said, but Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam. So this has been pointed out by our acharyas as the primary verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam, to understand that Krishna is the ultimate form of the Supreme Lord. Though there are other forms of God and they're all worshipable, nevertheless, the Bhagavatam is pointing out the special nature of Krishna. So he is in a very, very particular position. This, of course, is Lord Chaitanya's point also. He's pointing out that Krishna must be worshipped. So Krishna is in a very special position. And ultimately, everything in the Bhagavatam will point to that, that Krishna is the most wonderful form of the Supreme Lord. So, we may ask the question, why is it that Krishna can be superior to other forms of God if they're all God? Because God should be only God. There should not be a better God and a worse God. They should all be God and they shall be equal. So the answer to that is yes. We cannot say that any form of God is unequal. At the same time, we want to say that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He's in a special position. So how do we accommodate that contradiction of saying he's better than everybody else but they're all the same? If we say they're different, then we must say that there are different gods. There's not one god, there's many gods. Which is also not proper, because according to the Vedic literature, there should only be one god, not many gods. So there's one supreme god, but that one supreme god has a supreme form, and the form of Krishna. How is it possible? So the answer is that one answer, of course, is that this is Chinta Shakti of the Lord, that he can expand himself into many forms. And in these many forms, he can display some of his qualities. It doesn't mean he doesn't have the qualities, but he does not display them in that particular form, overtly. So the comparison is given to the moon. So if you look at the moon daily, and you look up in the sky, you'll see the full moon one day. And a few days later, you'll see the moon is a little bit less. And a few days later, it's smaller. And a few days later, it's smaller. Until you come to there's almost no moon in the sky at all. And then one day, there's an Amavasya, or a dark moon. And then you go on again and keep looking. Then gradually, the moon gets a little bigger and a little bigger and a little bigger and a little bigger. So all those are forms of the moon. We cannot say it's a different moon. It's the same moon. But sometimes that moon is manifesting more light and sometimes less light. So similarly, one God can manifest more qualities or less qualities, even though he's one, like the moon. The moon is one, but sometimes it's Purnima, sometimes it's Amavasya, sometimes it's Chaturdasi, etc. So it manifests different amounts of light at different times. Similarly, the Lord manifests different amounts of qualities in different forms. So Narasimhadev, he will manifest a certain amount of qualities. Doesn't mean he doesn't have the other qualities, but he doesn't manifest them. Ramchandra will manifest a certain amount of qualities. Vamanadeva will manifest a certain amount of qualities. Vishnu will manifest a certain amount of qualities. And Krishna will manifest a certain amount of qualities. So if we take all of these different forms and then we begin to enumerate the different qualities, we will see that some will manifest more qualities and some will manifest less qualities, even though they're all God and they're all perfect. Just like the moon is always the moon, but sometimes it manifests more light and sometimes less light. So in this way, we can therefore categorize the different forms of the Supreme Lord, from those that manifest less qualities and those that manifest more qualities. And this Lord Chaitanya does in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and also Rupa Goswami does this in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. So he's classified by different technical names like Prabhava, etc. And in this way, if we take all of the forms mentioned in the Bhagavatam, we all have a hierarchy from those that show less qualities and those that show more qualities. So we'll have forms like Dattatreya and Kapila and other sages. Obviously, they are manifesting less qualities. They don't kill demons, they don't do anything like that. They don't create the material world. You know, they're quite limited in what they manifest. Mostly they're manifesting knowledge. They teach. So sometimes the Lord acts as a sage, like Vedavyas or whatever. So they don't manifest so many qualities, so they're put in a lesser category. And then we find that others manifest more qualities. So we'll have like Kurma and Matsya and Varaha, Hayagriva, etc. Then they do more activities and they manifest more powers and more qualities. And Rupa Goswami ultimately classes at the top. He puts at the top form, what we call Purna Avatar, he puts three. Ramchandra, our first Narasimhadev, Ramchandra, and Krishna. So they manifest significantly more qualities than all the others. And of those three, Krishna is the one who manifests all the qualities. So he will manifest qualities that Rama does not and Narasimha does not manifest. So because of that, he is put in a special position. We call him Swayam Bhagavan. Doesn't mean he creates the other forms, because they're all eternal, so nothing is created, nobody's created. So if we say he's the original form of God, he's original in the sense that he is the perfect manifestation, not that he was all alone at one time, then he created all these other forms. Nobody's created. Even jivas are not created. So, therefore, when we say Swayam Bhagavan, we mean the form of the Lord that perfectly manifests all of the qualities in full. And there is no one else that manifests extra qualities beyond that. So So this is Krishna. And it's Krishna who manifests all the wonderful qualities. So he's put in a very special position because of this. What are the special qualities? Of course, there's so many different qualities. But Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar Devotion, there he categorizes the difference between Krishna and Vishnu by saying that Vishnu will have 60 qualities and Krishna will have 64 qualities. This, of course, is not we're not limiting Krishna by this because he has unlimited qualities, but just to give us an idea of the extra qualities that Krishna has. So these qualities, if we look at them carefully, we will see that what makes them special is that all of these qualities are madhurya, or sweet. Not madhurya in the sense of madhurya rasa, but madhurya in the sense that they create a great intimacy with the Supreme Lord. So that means that the form of Krishna manifests qualities of intimacy which the other forms do not manifest. Intimacy in the form of relationships with devotees. So these are manifested in Krishna, they're not manifested in Ramchandra or Narsimhadeva or other forms. So these are the madhurya qualities. For instance, there is the madhurya rupa. So Krishna has a very sweet form, a very beautiful form. That does not mean that Narsimhadeva is an ugly form, no. He has a beautiful form also. Ramchandra also has a beautiful form. And Vishnu has a beautiful form. If we look in the second canto or the third canto of Bhagavatam, we have descriptions of the Vishnu form that Dhruva saw, or the Vishnu form that Brahma saw. And very beautiful. Or even the Paramatma form that the yogi sees, described in the second canto. Very, very beautiful. It's not describable by material words. So all the forms of the Lord are definitely beautiful. But Krishna's form is a madhurya rupa. It's got a very special beauty to it. So what makes that beauty of Krishna special? So if we look at Krishna, we see his form is a little different from the other forms. Krishna is, of course, he comes in three forms. He comes as the very baby form. The Bala Krishna, or the Kaumara form. He comes a little bigger when he's 5 years old. That's the Pauganda form. And then he comes as the Kaishor form when he's 8 years old. So Krishna does not age beyond Kaishor form. So most of the pictures we will see is Krishna in his Kaishor form. That is considered to be the ideal age, the age of greatest beauty. So that doesn't mean that other avatars also have Kaishor age, etc. That's also there. But the remarkable thing about Krishna's Kaishor age is that he's not only got the Kaishor form, he has the form of a cowherd boy. And he dresses up like a cowherd boy. That is, he does not dress up like a prince or a king. Ramchandra is a king. And his beauty is associated with his kingly nature. Krishna is only a cowherd boy. And his beauty is associated with the forests of Vrindavan. So often we'll see descriptions of Krishna and how he's decorated. So he has a forest garland on him. He's decorated with the minerals of the forest. He doesn't have all these elaborate jewels all over his body. But he has a peacock feather on his head. So he's dressed in very simple clothing. He has a buffalo horn on his belt. He's holding a flute in his hand. On the other hand, we look at Vishnu. He's always holding a shankar and a chakra and a club and a lotus. And he's got a crown on his head with jewels. And he's got armbands with jewels on them. And he's got necklaces all over him. He's got a belt, a golden belt, etc. He's got a sword. He's got all these things around him. And similarly, Ramchandra will have a bow and an arrow, etc. So Krishna doesn't hold any weapons. He has a flute and a horn, and he has a peacock feather, and he has a gunja mala around his neck made out of seeds from the gunja plant, and forest flowers, etc. This is Krishna. So his beauty is very different from the beauty of the other forms. That is, it is an informal beauty associated with this youthful form of a cowherd boy. Huh? Yeah. So that beauty, that form of Krishna as a cowherd boy, allows greater intimacy. Huh? The other forms, like Vishnu, etc., their beauty is somewhat restrained because of their nature as a king or as an authority. So Krishna, in his beauty, he does not show that authority at all. He's simply a cowherd boy. So the beauty becomes unrestricted in that way. Huh? It's not associated with majesty or anything else. So he has Madhurya Rupa, a very, very sweet form. Huh? So the form itself allows a greater relationship. Huh? The beauty of that form attracts us in a certain way, which is different from the attraction of the beauty of Vishnu. Because that beauty of Vishnu is associated with his royal exalted position. The beauty of Krishna is not associated like that at all. It's nothing to do with position at all. So the emphasis is upon the relationship with Krishna rather than his position or anything else. So there's a greater intimacy because of his that type of beauty. So that's his beauty, Madhurya Rupa. He has all types of devotees. Now, of course, Nrisimhadeva has devotees and Vishnu has devotees, etc. Everybody has infinite devotees. But the special nature of Krishna's devotees is they come in all varieties. That is, we have the elders, the parents like Nanda and Yasoda. So we have parents with Vatsalya Rasa. We have friends. Krishna has billions of friends, cowherd boy friends, and Sakya Rasa. Of course, he has billions of gopis and Madhurya Rasa, and he has billions of servants in Dasya Rasa. So, and all of these relationships are there in a very, very intimate form. The other forms of God will manifest Dasya relationships only. So they have many devotees, but most of them are in Dasya relationships. If we come up to Ramchandra, yes, he has Vatsalya relationship with his mother and father, but with no one else. And he has Madhurya Rasa with Sita Devi, but with no one else. And Sakya Rasa with his brothers, but nobody else. And everybody else is Dasya. But Krishna has billions and billions of Sakya Rasa friends and billions and billions of gopis and billions of Vatsalya Rasa elder gopis and gopas also. So you've got all these varieties and all very intimately associated in a very close relationship with Krishna. So in other words, Krishna has all these types of relationships with in devotees which the others do not have, other forms of God do not have. Huh? And his pastimes or lila are Madhurya. Very sweet. All the pastimes of God, of course, are wonderful, whether it's Vishnu or Ramchandra or whatever. They're all very attractive and they're all spiritual. But the nature of Krishna's pastimes is that they are very, very sweet. Why? Because of the sweetness of the devotees. The relationship with the devotees is very sweet and intimate. So we have the parental rasa, which we'll not see much in others at all. And Ramchandra is a little parental rasa with his father and mother. But the parental rasa of Nanda and Yasoda with Krishna is much, much greater. And the pastimes will manifest in a more wonderful way. So therefore we'll have pastimes like Damodar Lila, where Krishna gets tied up by Mother Yasoda. We will not find that in Ramlila or Nrisimhadeva Lila, or any other Vishnu Lila. Nobody gets tied up. God does not get tied up. But Krishna gets tied up. So that is an example of Krishna's relationship with his devotees, that he agrees to be tied up by Mother Yasoda due to the intense love that he has for Mother Yasoda and the intense love that Yasoda has for him. Even in Dwarka, Devaki would never tie up Krishna. Never. But Mother Yasoda will tie up Krishna. And Krishna will allow that. So Krishna, and particularly in Raja, he is the one who has got the most wonderful pastimes of all. So he has the most remarkable sweet pastimes of the devotees. That does not mean that Krishna does not show power also. So somehow he can do that simultaneously, even in Vrindavan, while he's also hiding his powers. So when Brahma tried to trick Krishna and he stole all the calves and cowherd boys, then Krishna expanded himself into all the calves and cowherd boys for 1 year. After 1 year, Brahma came back, and then Brahma was puzzled because he saw the cowherd boys and the calves were still playing with Krishna. I thought I had put them in the cave and put them to sleep. And then he went to the cave and he looked in there and they were asleep. But he looked outside and he saw they weren't asleep because they were playing with Krishna. So then he thought, oh, how is this? How can there be two sets of cowherd boys? Which one is real? Are the ones outside real? Or the ones inside the cave sleeping real? Or are both unreal? Maybe the real ones are somewhere else. So he was puzzled. Even though he's the creator of the universe and creates all the living entities, he couldn't figure out how Krishna had created all these different forms which are exactly alike, and he could not distinguish one from the other, and which ones are the real ones. So he was puzzled, and then he looked at Krishna, and suddenly he saw all the calves and cowherd boys turn into Vishnus, and all there's millions of Vishnu forms all around Vrindavan. Huge Vishnu forms. And the Vishnu forms were the creators of universes, like Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. Each Vishnu was creating universes and worlds and like this, and they had all like a universal form. Each of the Vishnus became like a universal form. And then suddenly they all disappeared and only Krishna was standing there. So then Brahma understood, oh, Krishna is the source of all the Vishnus, and Vishnu is my creator because I come out of Vishnu's navel. So, and there's not one Vishnu, there are billions of Vishnus there, and they're all coming out of Krishna. He is the source of all the Vishnu forms. Huh? And I am simply a product of one of these Vishnus. So then he understood that Krishna is much greater than all the Vishnu forms, not just one Vishnu form, all the Vishnu forms, and Krishna is greater than that, because he can make them appear and disappear. So, in this way, Krishna manifested greatness, the greatness greater than Vishnu and Mahavishnu, etc., to Brahma. So in Vrindavan, Krishna was able to do this. So he manifests all greatness and at the same time all sweetness within his Vrindavan form. So, therefore, the pastimes of Krishna are particularly sweet. He has wonderful pastimes with his devotees in which he shows most remarkable affection for them and comes under the control of his devotees. And then, of course, his Madhurya flute, the Venu. He has a very sweet flute. So the nature of that flute is that when he plays that flute, anyone that hears it gets Madhurya Prema. So that's the special quality of the flute, he gives prema, inspires prema in anyone who hears that sound of the flute. So in this way, Krishna has these remarkable qualities, all associated with sweetness. And these are not manifested in any other form of the Lord. So these are things which distinguish Krishna from all the other forms, and therefore he's put in that special position of Swayam Bhagavan. So because he manifests more qualities, sweet qualities, which are very, very attractive, this form and the pastimes of Krishna are very suitable for the people of Kali Yuga. Because the people of Kali Yuga are very distracted and material and unintelligent and absorbed in material things, they need some powerful attraction to pull them out of Maya. So for this reason, Narada Muni told Veda Vyas, you only describe Krishna. And you tell everybody to worship Krishna and hear the pastimes of Krishna. This is what you should do. Because telling them to worship devatas and then gradually advance from tamagun to rajagun to sattvagun, that is not going to work in Kali Yuga. So you tell everybody to worship Krishna. So that is what Vedavyas did. He rewrote the Bhagavatam in such a way that the pastimes of Krishna become the prominent topic of the work. So, therefore, this is the topic of the Bhagavatam, ultimately Krishna as the supreme entity with his wonderful pastimes. If we say Krishna is supreme, that's nice, but why is he supreme? Why is he Swayam Bhagavan? So, the only way we will understand that is by appreciating his qualities. Yeah? Krishna has Madhurya qualities, extra qualities that others don't have. But the only way we will appreciate the qualities is by the pastimes. When Krishna does activities in relation with his devotees, then we will appreciate those qualities. Yeah? So in the Damodar Lila, we will see the qualities of Krishna manifest. We will see the qualities of Mother Yasoda manifest and how Krishna expresses his love for Mother Yasoda. In that. So, in all these different pastimes, we'll see wonderful qualities of Krishna and his devotees manifesting. So, in this way, by hearing the pastimes of Krishna, we can appreciate the extraordinary qualities of Krishna. And it's due to these qualities, understanding and relishing these qualities, that we develop our attraction. So, one of the main angas of bhakti, out of the five angas, is to relish the Srimad Bhagavatam in association with devotees. So the essence of the Bhagavatam, of course, is the past, are the pastimes of Krishna, wonderful pastimes of Krishna. So the idea is that the devotee should appreciate and relish and appreciate and get taste from the pastimes of Krishna. And by developing that taste means that they appreciate his wonderful qualities. And by developing that attraction to Krishna, everything is accomplished. We develop attraction for the Lord, we will have become detached from everything in the material world. So there is that famous verse written by Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion to illustrate the actually this in relation to the another anga, which is very powerful, that is to worship the Lord, the deity of the Lord with great affection. There's five important angas. So one is hearing, another is chanting, another is living in Vrindavan, another association of devotees, another is worship the deity with great affection. So, in relation to that, Rupa Goswami wrote a verse. He wrote his own verse to illustrate the great attraction to Krishna. So he describes the form of Shyam Sundar in the nighttime, in the moonlight, on the bank of the Jamuna River, with a flute in his mouth and in his threefold bending form. And then he says, if you see that form, then you will no longer have attraction to material things. So therefore, don't go and see him, because you'll lose your interest in your family and your society, and you'll stop working and everything. So don't go and see Krishna. So by stating something negative, he's showing the very positive nature of Krishna, and that he will, by developing an attraction for Krishna, then you will lose all attraction for material things. So this is the whole point of the Srimad Bhagavatam. By describing the pastimes of Krishna, we will begin to appreciate Krishna's wonderful qualities, and by that attraction, then we will lose our absorption in the material world, etc. So that was the aim of Narada Muni in giving advice to Vedavyas, and Vedavyas did that very nicely by rewriting the Bhagavatam and showing the pastimes of Krishna. And then, it actually in the next verse, third verse actually is shown like that. He gave the work to Sukadev. It's described how Sukadev was his son. But he didn't want to come out of the womb because he was Brahmagyani. He thought, oh, the material world's useless. If I see the material world, it'll fall in Maya.
and I am peaceful. I don't want to be attracted. So I'm sitting in the womb of Vasudeva's wife. It's more peaceful in here. I don't want to come out of the material world. So he stayed in there for 14 years or so. He's a post-mature baby. And he wouldn't come out. And Vedavyas got angry. And he began speaking to him. He said, "You have to come out." And Sukadeva says, "No. Because the material world is full of traps, maya, etc. So I don't want to fall from the position of Brahman and become attracted to material things, etc. So I'm not coming out." So Vedavyas didn't know what to do, because yes, it is true that if he came out, then the material world here is full of material things. So, it's not a very nice place. So it is a trap. So then he thought for a while. Then he went to Dwarka. And he got Krishna. And he persuaded Krishna to come to his ashram in the Himalayas from Dwarka. And he said, "You must speak to my son and tell him to come out of the womb." So Krishna came with Vedavyas up into the Himalayas, and he came to his ashram, and then he was introduced to the mother. And then Krishna began talking to Sukadeva when he was in the womb. And then Sukadeva said the same thing: "I'm not coming out because of maya out here." So then Krishna said, "Solution is this. I guarantee you come out, you will not get affected from maya. That is my promise. As Krishna, I'm promising you will not get affected by maya." So then Sukadeva couldn't say anything because it was a promise of the Supreme Lord. So then Sukadeva came out. But immediately he left the house. He left his father. So it's described here in Bhagavatam how he didn't take his upanayanam. He was 14 years old. So he should have had his upanayanam thread by then, That's a good Brahmin. But he didn't want it. So he left the house immediately. And Vyasadeva was crying, "Come back, come back, come back." And he didn't. He just walked away like that. And Vyasadeva ran after him. He couldn't catch him. So then Vyasadeva went back to his ashram, and then he thought, somehow I'll trick him. So he got his disciples. And he said, "You go, I know where he is." He went into meditation, and he found out in meditation, Vedavyas found out where he was in the forest. So he said, "You go to this place in the forest, and you sit down, and he will be in Samadhi on Brahman, in the forest. So you go there. And then you begin to chant the Srimad Bhagavatam." So the disciples went there, and they found him in the forest, and he was in Samadhi there under a tree like that, absorbed in trance. And they began reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. And then when he heard Srimad Bhagavatam, and he heard the name of Krishna in his pastimes, then his trance was finished. So that is described in the Bhagavatam with the Atmarama verse. It says even the Atmaramas, referring to Sukadeva, they become attracted to the pastimes of Krishna. So when Sukadeva heard the pastimes of Krishna, Brahman was no longer his interest, and he came out of trance. And then he said, "I must hear more about Krishna," and therefore the disciples took him back to the ashram, and then he learned the whole Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva. So that way, Sukadeva got the Bhagavatam. So he was an impersonalist, but by the mercy of Krishna and Vedavyas and the Srimad Bhagavatam, he became an exalted devotee of the Lord. So exalted that he surpassed Vedavyas. So therefore it's described in the third verse here that when the Bhagavatam comes out of the mouth of Sukha, it becomes sweeter than when it came out from Vasudeva. Because the realization and appreciation of Sukadeva was very, very high. Therefore it became very, very sweet. So that is why, more than Vedavyas, Sukadeva is glorified as the reciter of the Bhagavatam. Of course, he didn't write it. Vyasa wrote it, but Sukadeva recited it to Parikshit. And that became most sweet because of the experience and the realization of Sukadeva. So therefore, Sukadeva was most attracted to the pastimes of Krishna. Even though he had been a Brahmavadi or whatever, Atmarama, he became a great devotee of Krishna and became absorbed in Krishna. So when he spoke the Bhagavatam, then it became even more wonderful. So this is the form in which we get the Bhagavatam today. Very, very sweet. So in that third verse it's described that the Vedas are like a kalpa riksha. Kalpataru. And kalpataru, or a desire tree, is a tree that has all fruits on it. That is, anything you want, you can get. So that means the Vedas give you everything. So if you do Karmakanda in the Vedas, then you can get all your material things. You can go to Swargaloka or Brahmaloka or whatever. You can get all the money you want, and you get a beautiful form, and good health, everything. All material assets you can get from the Vedas if you follow Karmakanda. If you want liberation, you can also get that. If you follow Gyankanda and Yoga, you can get liberation. And of course, if you follow the path of bhakti, then you can get prema. That's also described in many, many scriptures. But the Srimad Bhagavatam offers the highest fruit. So many, many scriptures are there in this Kalpataru giving different fruits. But there's a high, high, high fruit on the very top of the tree. That's coming out of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is the highest fruit, and it's also the most difficult to get because you have to climb to the top of the tree to get it. So in that sense, it's the rarest. And it's also the sweetest. And it's the softest. And it's the juiciest. And the most difficult to get. So that fruit is the Bhagavatam. So why it's considered the rarest fruit and the sweetest fruit is because not only it gives bhakti, it gives that particular form of bhakti that is bhakti to Krishna, you know, Krishna's Madhurya, and it gives that. And of course, within Krishna and his pastimes, the ultimate rasa, as Krishna Prabhupada mentions here, is the Adi rasa, that is Madhurya rasa. That is considered the most intense and sweet of all. Therefore, it's called Madhurya rasa. Though all rasas are sweet, that is the highest rasa. So, and in that Madhurya rasa, the most intense relationship is that between Radha and Krishna, of all the gopis. And we have, of course, Chandravali and so many other gopis, but the highest is the relationship of Radha to Krishna, and that is considered the sweetest of all. And this, of course, is Lord Chaitanya's, what Lord Chaitanya came to reveal. So that, again, is the essence of everything. So that ultimately is the highest fruit. The Bhagavatam is the highest fruit. Within that, then we get the highest, highest, highest rasa in the form of the love of Radha and Krishna. So that is also in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is the sweetness of the Bhagavatam ultimately, is it presents all of this, including the Madhurya rasa and Radha and Krishna. And how does it become available? It is very rare because it's the topmost fruit, and you know, you try to climb up, you fall down. You can't try to climb to the topmost branch and you get up there and you fall off the tree. How do you get it? How do you get the fruit? You can throw rocks up and try to get the fruit off, and it'll come down smash, and then it's all over the ground. So how do you get the nice fruit intact? So now the answer is, it is passed down. Somebody gets the fruit and he passes to another person, passes to another person, passes to another person. So therefore, through the sampradaya, through the acharyas, we will get the actual sweetness of that fruit intact as it is. So that is why we have the sampradaya of Lord Chaitanya, the highest fruit, which is expressed by Lord Chaitanya because he's also playing the role of Radha. That is expressed through the different acharyas in our line. They bring us the Srimad Bhagavatam with the proper commentary, etc., so that we can appreciate the wonderful nature of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna, and the love of Krishna with his various devotees, up to the love of Radha and Krishna. Okay. Any question?
Conversation between Gautam Rishi and Ambarish Maharaj. So where is that referred to?
Which is Purana or something?
I think
it's a reference to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Padma Purana. It's from Padma Purana.
Sometimes we come across verses in Sri Sukha Vacha. Sukadeva Goswami spoke.
Yeah.
Now, how do we understand when that Sukadeva Goswami spoke what Srila Vedavyasa wrote, or Vedavyasa wrote after Sukadeva Goswami?
No, no. Vedavyasa wrote it, and then Sukadeva spoke that to Parikshit. So the whole, after the first canto is Sutta speaking, and in the second canto, Sukadeva begins speaking to Parikshit. And then he speaks until the, I think, chapter 6, end of chapter 6 in the 12th canto. And then again, Sutta Goswami begins speaking for the rest of the few chapters at the end of the 12th canto. So the middle part is all Sukadeva delivering the Bhagavatam of Vedavyas to Parikshit.
Two points. The first one,
what is that?
You know, you were mentioning the gods before, how they're all gods, but
yeah.
Special.
Yeah.
Is that the same but different? Is that
exactly? In one sense, yeah. Of course, the difference is not much there at all. We can also have a beta-bade with jivas and Krishna. That's significantly different. Or we can have beta-bade with matter and Krishna also. That's also there, which is even more different. So we have different levels of difference there and sameness. So in God, of course, you can have difference and sameness within himself, but it's not so much different there, actually.
And the other point, you said the fruit at the top of the tree is very hard to get, but on the other hand, it's also very easy. Surrender, and you get love Krishna, then it's very accessible.
It becomes accessible through our proper sampradaya. So that is why it's available in a Gaudiya Sampradaya. It's not available in the Sri Sampradaya or the Madhva Sampradaya. They can't figure out what that is. What is Radha and Krishna? They can't really understand.
You're talking about how the different avatars of Supreme Lord will have the same potency. Shaktivesh avatars, Jiva Tattva?
Yeah, they're a little different. Shaktivesh, there's six of those. Approximately. They are fixed in form, they're also eternal, but they're jivas with special powers, permanent powers. So for instance, the power of jnana is given to the kumaras, and the power of bhakti is given to Narada Muni, and the power of leveling the land is given to Prithu, and the power of conquering evil kshatriyas is given to Parsaram. Like that. Well, in the Nectar Devotion, there Rupa Goswami says that the jivas can have 50 out of the 60 qualities, but in very small portions, not fully. 50 of the 64 qualities, but in small quantities only.
And of course, that 64 is only the limit that they've said there, but in fact, it's unlimited.
It's unlimited qualities. That's only, let's say, we say a number given to give us some idea, but not a complete list. It's not an exhaustive list of Krishna's qualities, obviously.
Maharaj, the three Murtis, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu, they possess these material qualities?
Oh, they're called guna avatars. Now, Brahma, of course, is usually a jiva, and he's given powers for creating. So he's something like a Shaktivesh avatar, but he doesn't have permanent powers like a Shaktivesh avatar. He's not an eternal form in the spiritual world. So the Brahma is a jiva, he's a post, and then after he gives up his body, then he'll get a different body in the spiritual world. So whereas the Shaktivesh avatars have spiritual bodies and they're eternal. So he's a person with special powers given by the Lord for creation. Shiva is in a special category. He's like a Vishnu form with less powers manifested than Vishnu, but he's a Vishnu form with less powers manifested, and particularly for the destruction of the universe. So that's his particular function, to destroy universe, etc., and then be charged of tamagun. Yeah? So he manifests significantly less powers than the Vishnu forms, but he's not a jiva. Sometimes, in some universes, a jiva can also take up the role of a Shiva. But
But jivas never take up the role of Vishnu. So he's never a post. Vishnu is never a post. Whereas sometimes Shiva becomes a post and Brahma is usually a post.
Srimad Bhagavatam gives a lot of glory. Then at one point, you know, Shukadeva concludes that the goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is impersonal Brahma. So how do you understand that?
And that would be a contradiction. So therefore, any statement like that must be interpreted. So for instance, at the end of the Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto there, Sukadev says that, yes, now the conclusion is impersonal Brahman. How can it be? Because the initial whole proposition of the Bhagavatam by Suta Goswami, when he's explaining about Narada and Vedavyas, Narada tells Vyasadeva that you have to glorify Krishna as the ultimate of everything like that. And of course throughout the Bhagavatam the whole conclusion is the Asraya, the final thing is Krishna beyond Mukti. And of course we have verses like, you know, Advaya Jnana, that with Brahma Paramatma Bhagavan, etc. So the contents of the Bhagavatam itself contradict such a statement. So therefore we cannot take such a statement as a serious statement by Sukadeva, rather it's a test for Parikshit. And Parikshit answers by denying the whole thing and saying, no, no, the ultimate goal is Krishna, not personal Brahman.
And yesterday, you mentioned that Krishna is the description of God.
Yeah, he gives more meanings to it. Yes. Well, it depends on the meanings of the words. It's a little complicated unless you know Sanskrit, but each word he actually gives a different meaning to it. So that it becomes a lot like Krishna and his pastimes and like whatever like that. And for instance, we get the where was that? He managed to ultimately show that Adi Rasa is in here somewhere like that. I forgot exactly how he does it, but like that. So he gives a general description with Krishna as the subject, and then I think one of Radha and Krishna, and one of Bhakti, in terms of Bhakti. And all the words, he takes different meanings for the different words, and then can come up with a different meaning of all the different words and sentences, etc. I have the whole translation there, so you can look at it if you want. Yeah. Ultimately, no. You just worship Krishna, and that satisfies everything. Ultimately.
Is there a reason why there's so many different forms of Krishna and he's coming different age? There's different qualities.
What, avatars and everything?
Yeah.
Oh well, the Lord has variety. He likes variety, so he has many forms. And according to the function, different pastimes, then he will take different forms. For instance, it's very suitable to act as the form of a lion to kill Hiranyakashipu. He takes a form of anger and ferocity to kill him. So very suitable to become a lion and rip him apart and tear him apart and with his teeth and his claws. Even the rocks. The rocks melt.
The Mala Mantra, I heard it's just down
the Krishna too. I'm wondering. Well, the Maha Mantra is also non-different from Krishna and Radha and Krishna, so we can say ultimately yes. In that sense. I never heard an exact statement like that. Maybe there is some in some one of the poems of Rupa Goswami or something like that. But it's ultimately Radha and Krishna, so it is also Prema. Huh? So the name is non-different from the Supreme Lord Himself. So Hare and Krishna represent Radha and Krishna, so obviously that means Madhurya Rasa. Well, there is the Ramanandi Sampradaya. They worship Rama, among other things. They are an offshoot of the Sri Sampradaya. Though I don't know if the Sri Sampradaya formally recognizes them, but somehow from the Sri Sampradaya, someone offshoot of that became the Ramanandi Sampradaya, which is, a lot of them seem to be yogis and things like that in that Sampradaya. Okay, Hare Krishna.